Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Ritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anisantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavatveshini.
Okay. So, verse 10. Chapter 10, verse 1. Chapter 10, verse 1.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhuya Eva Mahabhaho, Shrinu me paramam vachaha, yateham priyamanaya, vakshami hitakamyaya.
So here, chapter 10 is really when Krishna gives the whole Ishvara Swarupa, the whole vision of Ishvara, that Ishvara is upadhi, the whole form of Ishvara. So he starts out saying to Hey Mahabhaho, means one, it's a name for, epithet for Arjuna, the one who has great arms, means who has great strength, is a great warrior. So he says, Bhuyaha Eva, Bhuyaha, it's indeclinable, it means again. Oh, let me do the Sandhi for you. Bhuyaha Eva Mahabhaho Shrinu Me Paramam Vachaha Yet te aham priyamanaya vakshami hita kamyaya. So he says, Bhuyaha eva. Eva is emphasis. So you say Bhuyaha just means again. With again, I'm going to tell you this. Again, please listen. So Bhuyaha eva mahabhaho, and a name for Arjuna, the one who has great strength. Shrinu, listen. Please listen, imperative. Second person, so you can get her. Yeah. Just to say hi to you. She has a good relationship with Peter. She won't miss him. Shrinu, may you listen. Me paramam vachaha. Vachaha means to my speech, to my words, what I'm going to be saying. And that this that I'm going to be talking about is paramam. Paramam means we use a word like supreme, but what we really mean is we're going to be talking about that for which there is nothing greater. So these words, the subject matter of which there is paramam, supreme, there is nothing greater. That which reveals the nature of reality, which is beyond time, space, you know, the paramatma. So, listen to me when I speak these. Please listen now again, as I'm going to unfold this supreme truth in the form of these words. So paramam vachaha. Then he says, "Yet te aham," which to you, I. It says, just so that you understand the Sanskrit. Yet those words which to you, aham vakshami, I will tell to you. Who are priyamanaya? Priyamanaya, who are, means to you who are priyamana. Priyamana means you're there being pleased. So it's, you can imagine, Swamiji uses this example with this, is that when you're teaching a student, if the student is intent on what you're unfolding, because now this is the 10th chapter. So Krishna has been teaching Arjuna this straight through for 10 chapters now. And so Arjuna is very intent on what Krishna is teaching. And Krishna can tell that because he's focused. Arjuna is very focused and very intent and very taken with it, as we are when we're really engaged and an unfoldment takes place, a Vedanta unfoldment takes place. There is a certain ananda and a certain being totally pleased as those words are coming in because they're such a relief. Right? The vision itself is such a relief. And so Arjuna is very engaged in this vision that Krishna is giving. So Krishna makes note of that. He says, to you, that te means I vakshami, I will tell you, that's the te, you who are so pleased, where they're being absorbed, being pleased. I will tell you this. Hita kamyaya means for your welfare. What I'm going to unfold to you is for you, is with a desire, kamya. It's with a desire for your hitam. Hitam is that which, something is hitam for you if it blesses you, if it's beneficial for you, if it's good for you. So here, Krishna is saying, I'm going to teach you this again. You know, please listen. I'm going to teach you these sacred words. I'm going to unfold to you these sacred words, paramam vachaha, to you who are intent on hearing them. That's the Priyamana. To you who are so intent on hearing them. And I'm going to tell you all of this because of my own desire to bless you, right? Because of my desire to give you this, which is hitam, which is a blessing for you. So that's how he introduces this verse. Shankara says here also, and Swamiji also in his commentary, in this chapter 10, as you'll see as we get more into it, Krishna really speaks of himself as Ishwara and of all of his vibhutis, all of his glories. Vibhuti is your glory. And so, in fact, anything in this creation that stands out, like, say, for instance, the best tennis player, or an Einstein, or the tallest mountain, or the biggest tree, or the clearest lake, those are vibhutis. All of these things that when you see it, you feel the wonder, that ascharya, that you feel a wonder. All of those things we look at as Ishwara's vibhuti. We can also look at the very fact of this creation as Ishwara's vibhuti. The whole manifestation of this creation is Ishwara's vibhuti. It's his shakti, his capacity for this creation to manifest and to go into unmanifest condition. But for us as jivas, when we look around, those things that strike us as wonders, those are all considered Ishwara's vibhutis. You can also look at the things that don't strike you as a wonder. It's Ishwara's vibhuti also. Right? You know, but it brings that, when you look at things that are absorbing, that are very absorbing, you know, and wondrous, he's pointing those out because it brings that sense of awe and wonder and absorption when you see them. So that's why it's called a vibhuti. So Shankara is saying here that he says Krishna dealt with this and talked about his vibhutis and also his own swarupa, his own nature, extensively in the 7th chapter and in the 9th chapter. And now, again, we're doing it. So he says, the thing is that this knowledge does need to be told over and over and over again from many different ways. Why? Because durvignyayatvat, because of being difficult to understand. It's difficult to understand. It's difficult to gain nishta in. Difficult to understand means this, that you probably all have the experiences when this vision is being unfolded. Lita, you were just talking about this, I think. When the vision is being unfolded, it seems so clear at the time of teaching. And then the teaching goes on and on and on over a period of months. And then you go back to the beginning again. You go back to a beginning class. And it's being unfolded. And now you understand it in a completely different way. As you go on listening, you understand it in a different way with more and more and more depth. Right? And you also find that as you go on listening, doubts that you didn't know that you had come to the surface, and then those doubts are resolved. And in the resolution of those doubts, more things are resolved. It's kind of like if you throw a stone in a puddle, into a lake, how the ripple effect goes all the way through to the very edges of the lake. You find any new understanding that you have has that type of ripple effect that goes through the entire scope or range of your knowledge. And so every piece of clarity has that type of ripple effect and affects us everything else that you know. Everything else that you've understood as another layer of connectedness and another layer of depth. So that's the experience. It's not that you just hear it once, you know, and then that pep of clarity is there. You hear it over and over and over from many different aspects, and it becomes a multi-dimensional, multi-layered clarity. You know, I remember always listening to Swamiji being just overwhelmed with kind of a joy, probably that Priyamana that I was talking about, overwhelmed with just a wonder, a sense of wonder and joy that I thought this particular thing was understood, what he was talking about, and now he's going into an even deeper level, you know. And that process goes on and on and on and on. So this, the durvignya, it's not so much that it's difficult to know. For a mumukshu, in a sense, it's difficult to know because the atma and the self and the reality that you are is much more than, there's much more to be understood in terms of knowledge than just what you perceive with your senses. You have to understand and recognize both the nature of the subject and the object. The subject and the object have to come together as one being, you know. So the subject that you are, the conscious being that you are, right, is in fact the subject of everything that is perceived. There's only one subject. And so the subject of this body is the subject of the rug. The self of this body is the self of the rug, is the self of the table. And so if the self that I am is also the self of the table, then I am both the subject, because when I'm talking as an individual, talking to you, I'm the subject and you're all the object. So you're the subject and we're all the object. Okay? But when I realize that I'm the self of this subject in reference to this object, I'm both the self of the subject and the self of the object. You see what I mean? And so the self of the subject, which is the self of the object, which is the self of the table and the rug and a view and a view and of Tibi and the Vishwara, you know, I have to be able to recognize that. That means that I have to recognize, in fact, that I am the one who's the self of me and the self of the table, you know, is the self of everything. And if I'm the self of this and the self of the table, then I might as well be the self of everything. What's the difference? Right? If I'm the self of this and the self of this, then I'm the self of everything. Right? And this is inert. Like I say, I'm the self of you, me, and I'm the self of you. Well, there's some commonality in the sense that you're a conscious being and I'm a conscious being. So, yeah, we're like twins. I'm myself and I'm just like you. But we can't say that in reference to the table. You know, I can't say, oh, I'm just like you, able, you know, like we're two conscious beings. So there's something else to be understood here, you know. If I'm the self of my body, and I'm self of the table, and I'm the self of you, and the self of Ishwara, then that recognition requires something much different than we're used to recognizing in terms of gaining knowledge. Because what we're used to in terms of gaining knowledge is anything that I can perceive in the perception of something, you know, any type of vritti, any type of thought modification that I bring into my mind, I am then aware of it, and once I'm aware of it, then I know it, I've gained some knowledge. But I cannot bring the experience of me into some sort of new experience. See, if I look at that painting. Now I'm not looking at it. Now I'm looking at it. I'm bringing the painting into my field of experience, and it wasn't there before. Right? That's how we gain knowledge. Oh, this is something I didn't know. Now I know it. It wasn't there to be experienced. Now it's there to be experienced, and now I can learn all about it because I'm experiencing it. But it wasn't there before. You cannot say that about yourself. You can't say that the Atma, that the me, was not there before. I always am here. And so the self-experience is not something I can bring into consciousness or bring into my realm of experience. It's already totally there. And so there's a different process involved in my being able to recognize myself as the non-objectifiable, the changeless content of all of my experience. So it's not gaining a new knowledge, it's a recognizing of something that is always there, always have been there. And that's why when you do gain this knowledge, you do what the recognition, if I were to kind of use words to describe the experience, it's like Oh, you mean I? I am Brahman. The very I that you've always taken yourself to be, because that's the very I, the very self, that you always have been. And so it's not a new experience, it's just a shock that you happen to be Paramam. You happen to be absolutely free, you happen to be changeless, you happen to be free from birth and death, you happen to be the very being of Ishvara. But the recognition is, oh, you mean I see, I am that. The I that I've always identified as myself. It's just that this I that I've always taken to be myself, I had thought was a product of this body. But I come to recognize that the very I that I've always taken to be myself, in fact, is absolutely free. That, to get that knowledge, is in a way very easy because it couldn't be closer to you, because it is you, you're absolutely present here. And in a way, it's very difficult. It's very difficult because we have related to the world solely as this I being this body, mind, sense organs. So all of the connections and associations we have in our brain, right? All of the associations come from this ahankara, this I notion that is based in ajnanam. And the ignorance is not the ignorance of my being, it's the ignorance of what my being is. So you're not, when you gain knowledge, you don't think, oh, it's as though you've gone to a foreign planet and landed on it and then reached real and had an experience of yourself as some new being that you had no clue. And finally, you know, you're enlightened, you met it. There's no, it's not a meeting. It's a recognition that you, the one you've always taken yourself to be, that you are free. So it's a totally different thing. It's be like, that's why they use the tenth man story. When the tenth man is told by the old sadhu, you are the tenth man. It's not like he has a different experience of himself, you know, or that he's met some tenth man somewhere. No, it's you are the tenth man, you know. And so it's just a very different situation. But when Swamiji tells that tenth man story, he really goes on and on about it. Like, he'll have a tenth man, you know, suffering from the loss of the tenth and banging his head on the tree out of, you know, misery and sorrow and grief because of the lost tenth man. He bangs his head on the tree and there's a big cut there and scab. And by the time the old sadhu comes and gives him knowledge that you are the tenth man, he's already has a lot of wounds. He's all wounded because of, you know, all of his trauma and hurt and all of the things that he's done out of grief for the loss of the tenth man. Now he has to, you know, he has knowledge, but he also has to tend all of these wounds that have come about, you know, because of a seeming loss of the tenth man. And so for us, it's the seeming loss of our wholeness, the seeming loss of our freedom that drives the jiva and crazy, you know, where we're scrambling to get ourselves back and trying to ward off those people and situations that are trying to take it away from me and go toward, you know, the people that might be beneficial to my getting that. But what I'm running, looking for is the experience of me. The experience of me. Actually, what I don't realize that I'm always there, and what I'm really looking for is a little glimmer of ananda in the mind. You know, that's what we go after. We go after these little, what we call these little leshas, these little openings of ananda that you get through a quiet mind. We don't recognize the ananda that's abiding there always in the quiet mind and in the depressed mind. You know, that's something really to understand. So there's a lot to be unfolded here. And to get all of that straight, when everything in your mind is geared toward participation in the universe, it requires unfoldment from a lot of different angles. And this section here, Krishna is spending a lot of time extolling all of his vibhutis so that Arjuna can get an appreciation for Ishvara, to really get an appreciation for Ishvara. He'll go on saying, even And even in verse 3 or 4, he'll say, Krishna will say, and I'm the sukha, the pleasurable experiences, I'm the dukkha, I'm the sorrowful experiences. And he's going to go through verse after verse, claiming all of this as him, kind of like Rudra, chanting Rudra. So, and then so, Shankara says, you know, really recognizing your own swarupa, your own nature as being all of this is difficult. And so, in that unfoldment, we have to cover kind of all of the vibhutis of Ishvara and then the nature of Ishvara as being yourself. So Ishvara in total has to be unfolded. I think the thing to understand also is with knowledge or with freedom, what we call freedom moksha, the vision isn't just having a recognition of just of Brahman as Satchitananda. It's the Brahman is, you are really just Satchitananda. That's who you are. That's the truth of it all. But the jiva, in order to be free, really, the jiva has to recognize that I am Ishvara. And so what does that mean? Is that if I can say that I am this, right? Then that means, once I can say that, that means that myself, this me, is the self of this whole creation, is the very being, like the clay is the very being of the pot, or the water is the very being of the waves and the ocean. I have to be able to say with nishta, with recognition, that I am the very self, I am the self of all of this. This is nothing but me. Now, if I can say that, then this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishvara, just like the wave belongs to the ocean. Or sometimes Swamiji he hasn't done this for a while, but I used to really like it. It's like a little cell in the body, you know, has to recognize that it actually belongs and is part and parcel and is governed by the laws of the whole body. It's not alone, right? It's part of an order. It belongs to that order. It functions within that order. It has a place within that order. It belongs to the order of the whole body. And so, like that, this jiva has to recognize that everything about me is this body, mind, sense organs, and about my life is something that is Ishvara. You can say, start out by saying it belongs to Ishvara. When you use language like that, you mean that it's part of Ishvara. It's part of a greater picture. Now, I have a place in this creation because I'm here. You know, if you're here, you have a place in this creation. You're part of Ishvara. This body, mind, sense organs is a cell in the whole. So you are part of Ishvara, and you're taken care of by Ishvara, by the laws of the total. And so when that's true, that's only part of it, though, then you have to realize, and this Ishvara is me. It's not somebody else. You see what I mean? But now, if I say that without having really unfolded this vision from many different standpoints, you're going to say, I'm not Ishvara. How can you say I'm Ishvara? You can only recognize that when the body, the mind, the sense organs, everything about the jiva belongs to Ishvara, right? And the me belongs to Brahman, myself. If I say I am the whole, then I am Brahman, and this body, mind, sense organs, and everything that can be objectified, you know, is Ishvara's upadi, you know, is Ishvara's form. You see that? It's like if I'm the water in an ocean, then I, the water, am all of the waves and the ocean. And then I can say, I am the whole. So speaking from the water, I say, I am all of the jivas, I am the self of all of the jivas, I am the self of Ishvara. You know? So that's the water speaking. Okay. So the water says, I am the self of all of the jiva waves, and I am the self of the ocean. Okay. Now say, the whole ocean says, you know, I am nothing but water. The ocean, it's easy for the ocean to say that because there's no limitation for the ocean. There's nothing but water. He says, I am nothing but water. I am only water. So we can say that. That's Ishwara, all knowledge. There's no limitation there. You know, Ishwara can say, I am the whole. There's nothing beyond me. You know, it's easy for Ishwara to say. And everything that is in me, all of these waves are my vibhuti. You know, they're my glory. All of the variety, all of the manifestation of all of the differences in this beautiful ocean with so much variety and so many different types of waves and all of the birth and death and change, all of this is me alone, you know. And Ishwara can revel in it, you know. But for the wave to have that same reveling is more of same understanding is more of a task because the wave form is limited, right? And so the wave can come to a feeling, like this is more in yoga, the little wave will come to a feeling or a recognition that I am water. Yeah. Or my being is water. But that's not good enough. It has to recognize that I am the water, which is the water of all beings. See what I mean? It's not just that I am water, and you are water, and you are water, and you are water. Well, I've just listed four waters. It has to be, there's only one water. And I'm the one water, which is the truth of the whole creation. It's harder for the jiva than it is for Ishwara. Ishwara doesn't have any ignorance, you know. So for Ishwara to say, you know, I am water and there's nothing but me, is easy. There's no ignanam, no limitation. But for you to say it, I am water and there's nothing but me, you have to have recognized that this body, mind, sense organs, which you're so totally identified with until you come to knowledge, everyone, not just one person, everybody is totally identified with the body, mind, sense organs, jiva, upadi. You know, for that person to make that transition from I am this body within this creation worshipping the Lord to I am the self of the Lord and of every being, that's a big transition. It can be intellectual understanding, but to be embodied, a body recognition, takes some time, you know. And because it takes some time, you don't just come to Shravana for 1 or 2 days, you know.
It's okay.
Teaching goes on for a long time, you know. And then you find yourself over time gaining more and more and more nishta in the mind owning it, you know, owning up this knowledge.
Nishta?
Nishta means clarity. Clarity without doubt. Sometimes we use the word nishta can translate as, you know, firmness or strength of knowledge, lack of vagueness, freedom for doubt. But sometimes we just translate it as clarity. Clarity without doubt. So with keeping all of that in mind, this is how Krishna Shankara introduces this chapter. Keeping all of that in mind, then he says to Arjuna, because he's already been dealing with this whole topic, he says, listen to me again, tell you this, because I see how engaged this is pleasing you. For your own benefit, I want to teach you more. I want to give you more. So then, let's do the next verse. Name vidus suraganaha. Name vidus suraganaha. Prabhavanna maharshiyaha. Prabhavanna maharshiyaha. Aham adirhi devanam. Maharshinam cha sarvashaha. Maharshinam cha sarvashaha. He says, na me viduhu sura ganaha. Prabhavam na maharshiyaha. Aham adihi hi devanam. Maharshanam cha sarvashaha. So remember, he said, I'm going to tell you this again. You know, now, and he says, why I'm going to tell you again? Why are we going on with this? He says, the Sura Ganaha means all the group. Gana is the whole collection, the whole group of devatas. Sura means the devatas. All of the gods and goddesses, all of the devatas in the creation, and all of the Maharishis, all of the Maharishis, like Bhrigu, and all of the Rishis that are cited in the Upanishads, all of the great sages, all of them, all of the Devatas and all of the Rishis, they do not know me prabhavam. They don't know my origin. And also prabhavam means also my glory. You can take the word either way, and Swam Shankara and Swamiji take it both ways. They don't know my origin, where I come from, nor is there any way for them to know all of my glories. He says, they don't know that. Why? Aham adihi hi, because, he means because, I am their cause, adihi means beginning. I am their very cause. I am the cause of the devas, devanam, cha maharshinam, and of the maharshis, and of the rishis. I am their origin, I am their cause. You know, I'm the cause of them, sarvashaha, in every way. And so here, this is a verse which is really pointing to the necessity for the Vedas, because those that come out of the creation, say come, for whom Ishwara is the cause. You know, Ishwara means Ishwara is before. Ishwara is the cause of their very being, their creator, the very cause. There's no way for them to know Ishwara. You know, how can they know? Because they've come from him. Swamiji uses kind of a sweet example of a father telling his son in great detail about his wedding to his mother. So the father's telling the son about his own wedding, in great detail, everything that happened at the wedding. And the son said, "Oh, why didn't you bring me? why didn't you bring me? You know, I would have loved to have been there. Why didn't you bring me? You know?" And there's no possibility for that, right? And then there's the problem comes with, he can't bring the son to the wedding, you know, of the one that gave birth to him. It's not possible, right, to do that. And then again, there's no way for that boy to really know about that wedding unless the father tells him. He has to be told. Right? Otherwise, how can he know? Right? And so in the same way, then Swamiji uses another example, same way with a teacher and a student. The teacher has to teach the student. The student is learning from the teacher. And the student will gain the knowledge that the teacher has to give. But the teacher will have more in his or her mind than what the student has. Because the teacher is the one who's giving the knowledge. The student doesn't have the knowledge. And so now, kind of putting those two together, with Ishwara, how is the rishi or a devata or a mumukshu, or anybody, going to know who Ishwara is unless Ishwara says, this is who I am, this is what I'm like? How? I mean, I think that's an amazing question, because actually it's totally beyond what we call epistemological limits. It means that the pramanas, the means of knowledge that you have available to you as an individual, don't extend that far. They don't extend to what was there prior to the creation. See, it's like, what was there prior to creation? What was the cause? What was your cause? You know?
Can you say the question again? Did you say, this is a great question?
Yeah, this is a great question. Like, what are you as, and this is a very heavily discussed question within the whole Indian pantheon of Purvapaksha, Siddhanta, all of the different schools of thought. You know, what are you as an individual able to know? How far do your means of knowledge extend? You know, like, how far can you use sense perception? What are the limits of sense perception? You know, what are the limits of inference? See what I mean? Like, we have the sense organs that we have And then the means of knowledge that are based on those sense perceptions really are only valid within the dual world, within the world that we experience. Like, for instance, you say, even if you look like this, here in this waking state, we use our sense organs to explore the world, and also our inference and presumption and all of the means of knowledge that we have. And we can go smaller and smaller and smaller if we get appropriate instruments, right? Our sense organs will allow us to do that, as long as we get in microscopes and telescopes and these type of things, and even for hearing amplification. There's so many things that we can do to extend the range of our sense perception, but we are extending the range of sense perception. And that means the range of sense perception is the sense objects. In other words, the range of my sight is any type of form or color. But it's not something beyond that. My eyes will give me form and color. My ears will give me sound. I can extend the range, but what are they going to give me? Is sound, you know? And now, can the sense organs and inference and presumption give me the nature of what was there prior to sensory perception? Or what is there that is not within the scope, within the range of sensory perception? You know? And so say you want to know the truth, the nature of reality, or the nature of this creation, or the beginnings of this creation, or what was prior to this creation. What was prior to, see, he uses the word adi, what was first? What was first prior to duality? If there was anything, how can you know it? Through what means of knowledge? So here, Krishna says, I have to tell you that. You know, I am, as Ishwara, I'm the one that tells you that. Just like the father tells the son, you know, about what was going on before he was. That's the idea. Or the teacher tells the student, gives the student knowledge, all the while having much more knowledge than the student has. That's how the process is. So here he says, he's talking again about the durvignyayatvam. You know, I will teach you this again, and in fact, bhuyaha eva means indeed again and again and again and again, from many, many different standpoints. Why? Because my nature, you know, my glories and my origin is not even possible for the gods and the rishis to know. Because I am their origin. In every way, I am their origin. I am the origin, and he'll go on to explain this, I am the origin and the cause of the manifestation of the creation. And I'm also the very nimit, what we call the upadana karana, the material cause of the creation. Another way of saying that is like Ishwara saying, I am the pot maker and I am the clay. I'm both the pot maker and the clay. When we think of a creator, we think of the pot maker who crafts, who makes an object out of the clay, which is different than the pot maker, right? The artist or the pot maker is what we call the nimittakarna, the intelligent being, you know? The intelligent being, who's an artist in this case, or a potter in this case, gets a material cause, a material, which he uses as his material to craft the pot. Okay? So the pot would be the material cause. The clay would be the material cause. The pot maker is the intelligent being, you know, which makes something out of the material cause. But Ishwara says, in Sarvashaha, in every way, I am the origin. I am both the material cause of this whole creation, including all of the devatas, including you, including all of the rishis. I'm their very material cause. I'm the clay, and I'm the intelligent. I'm the clay. I'm the very material out of which all of this has come. And I'm also the intelligence, the knowledge, you know, which is this manifestation. That's another, we say, I am the knowledge. This is kind of a subtle point. I think I will just talk about this for a minute because it's important. Right now, if you say, there's two ways of looking at your experience right now. You can say, I know you. And when I say that, I am identifying with this body, mind, sense organs, I, this person sitting here, I am a knower. I know you. Okay? And so I'm identified with my mind and my sense organs, and then I'm through my mind and sense organs, I'm aware of you. Okay. So that's one level where I'm doing that identification with the sense organs and mind. Now you can have another level, which is the Ishvara level. It's your level too, but it's not because of Ajnanam. You don't really acknowledge or pay any attention to this level. There is, in this moment, your presence, which is just me, you, the conscious being. And there is the manifestation, and there's the names and forms which make up this experience, this room, whatever you're perceiving through your sense organs. Okay, so just look at this, just try to do this for a minute, make your mind take this form. Through your sense organs right now, you're having an experience of the room, right? So you're seeing all of the colors and the names and forms of the room, maybe hearing some sounds. But now you just relax a little bit and then realize also that there's also the experience of your body in the room through the same sense organs. There's also the experience internally of the body and the breath, if you become more subtle and just try to be aware of all of the totality of the experience, all of this is included. Then there's whatever else is going on in your mind, like there are maybe some moods, some moodiness or feelings or imaginations or distractions going on. It's fine. It's all part of it. That's part of the experience. This experience now is what we call knowledge. So forget about the subject-object. The experience is what we call knowledge. And then the self of that experience is what we call me, or Satchit. So when we talk, there's me, the conscious being, plus this manifest knowledge. So there's me and knowledge. And so if you relax for a minute, what you see is that this experience at this moment, we can say, is knowledge. That's what it is. Any vritti that you have, any thought that you have, is knowledge. Now what's interesting is any thought that you have includes everything that you would normally take as subject-object. The subject-object is included in that knowledge. It's part of the experience. Both the subject, body, mind, sense organs, and what you are experiences are both part of the experience. In this very room, if you can just relax and forget about the knower known, the knower and the known are included in the experience. And so there is me, plus in a sense, the subject-object experience that makes up the totality of experience of the room. So now think of that. Now think about this. If I were to ask you right now to, which I'm going to, close your eyes and imagine this room with you in it. Imagine the room. Right? So now, if you have the imagination of the room with you in the room, right, it's easy to see that. That there's just you with room knowledge. And if you're in the room, then you put yourself in that imagination. Okay, now open your eyes. This is exactly the same. There isn't any difference, actually. And that's a really important meditation to do. There is consciousness, there is me, plus Maya. From the standpoint of the jiva, your the Maya is experienced through your sense organs and through your mind, in a sense. Whereas from the standpoint of Ishvara, there is no jiva upadhi. All of the jiva upadhis are included in that manifest knowledge. Just like if you imagine the room instead of being identified with your body and mind sense organ, then you are seated in the room. If you have a dream, it's very easy to understand. You're identified with the character in the dream, right? But you are really what is happening there is just your being, right, with the manifestation of the dream. And everything is just manifest knowledge. Your experience right now is exactly the same as that. You know, whether you take the experience of you in this room, or you in a dream, right, or you in an imagination. The experience is identical in the sense that you never experience anything beyond your vritti, beyond the thought modification. Whether the thought modification is in this empirical reality, caused by this empirical reality through your sense organs, you know, it's still a thought modification that you're experiencing. You are the self of that thought modification and of everything in it, right? And so the thought modification is what we call knowledge. It's jnanavritti, it's knowledge. Oh. And that knowledge takes place in awareness. Now, because of the dehatma buddhi, this identification with the body, that is something that you don't recognize until you do. You don't recognize it because your sense organs and your sense of touch just as though encapsulate you, as though you are contained in this body, mind, sense organs. But you're not contained at all. You're not contained at all. Your being is the very self of the room. And in fact, we only say the self of the room because my sense organs are limiting the knowledge. Whereas Ishvara doesn't have sense organs. Ishvara is the whole infinite vritti. And so there's nothing limiting the knowledge. See what I mean? But the relationship between Atma and whatever knowledge is there, whatever Maya is there, is exactly the same. And so that's why we can use all of these different modalities like the dream state and the imagination and the waking state to try to help you to understand that there isn't any difference really in terms of your being, in terms of the containment of you. If I ask you to like imagine the meadow, it's easy for you to see that you're the self of the meadow, right? Because it's your imagination, so you can see, yes, I'm the self of the meadow. There is no, the meadow totally depends on me for its being. But there's nothing different here, really, because your experience here is that you're the, in the meadow, I'm the self of the vritti, thought modification. I'm the self of the meadow thought modification. Here, I'm the self of this thought modification. In terms of your experience, we have to account for Ishvara's, the objective shared reality that we have. But I'm talking about your experience. This is what we're doing in Sat Darshan. It's the same thing, you know. If your experience here is only a vritti, what you're actually experiencing is only a thought modification, then why is it more difficult to see that you are the self of the whole in reference to this vritti, then why is that more difficult than to see that you are the self of the meadow imagination? Right? Experientially. Because experientially it's identical. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because of the strength of this dehatma buddhi. It's like asking if in the meadow imagination, for you it's easy. But ask the character in the meadow imagination to do it. See what I mean? The character in the meadow imagination would find it really hard to do that. Even though it's exactly the same in terms of the relationship between me, right, and the experience that I'm having. So here, that's why he says this is something difficult to know, and we have to see, understand Ishvara from all different aspects. You know, so that we come into relationship with Ishvara and then recognize recognize the Atma from Ishwara's viewpoint. And we have to, in the whole Mahavakya Tattvamasi, the first six chapters are Tvam, trying to recognize the self from your viewpoint as a jiva. The second six chapters are trying to recognize the self from Ishwara's standpoint. And so now, we're getting to the last, to the, near the end of this section. You know, chapter 12 is the end of it. And Krishna has been teaching Ishwara this, Arjuna this, from Ishwara's standpoint. You know, all of these, what, 7, 8, 9, now we're on 10. And now Arjuna is going to say, please show me what you look like, because there's no way for me to see it. Please let me see your form. Let me experience your form. Give me some special grace to be able to see exactly what your form looks like. And so that's what Krishna is, that's what this chapter is leading up to. And then Krishna first talks about all of the vibhutis, all of his nature, and starts unfolding that, and then shows his whole swarupa, because Arjuna asked for that, and to bless him he showed him. And Arjuna got scared.
Yeah, because he didn't see it all as vibhutis.
But he didn't see it all as himself. He has to, if you have to see this whole form as me, if you see this form, this infinite form, from the standpoint of the jiva, you know, like, oh, then it would be, oh my God, I'm going to be crushed. Because when Arjuna saw that form, what he saw was everybody being crushed by time. You know, like the whole thing is like a giant mixer. And this person's born and died, and this person's getting crushed, and these things, limbs are flying all over the place. And
that's not a great wonder. I mean, that's not...
Not when you're one of the ones in the mm-hmm. in the mixer. You know? So he said, no, I don't want to see that. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, it's just an infinite display of knowledge. It's a different type of a vision. You know? And so Arjuna said, no, I'm not ready to see that. Pull back on that. But anyway, we're not there yet. We're getting there. Okay, let's stop here. We're going there later. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.